saying how much they want a strong woman. What they really want is a cheerleader.
I'd like someone who's physically very frail and won't stop talking.
I just want what everybody wants. I just seem to have a harder time getting it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Maximum Film. It's episode 330. It's time to get down and dirty. It's your host, Iffy Whitey, waiting in the booth with me are my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we have the Christmas Zaddy glowing at full power right now amongst us. It's right before you go into hibernation, but you're at your most powerful, but also our favorite critic, Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
Well, Iffy, thank you. We're in that moment where I think we start to think about others, and the others that I really want to thank for their tireless service and incredible skill is our nation's professional gift wrappers. Did I get any gifts professionally wrapped this year? I did not. Did I wish I had while I was wrapping them myself? Boy, howdy, yes, because I suck at this. You would think that having watched all those Hallmark movies, somehow by osmosis, I would have picked up some skills on like getting the corners right and where to put the tape and how to like get it all smooth and out of the excess at the ends. No, it's a disaster. I wrap gifts about as well as I did when I was 12. And because I do it like once or twice a year, I haven't really, you know, I haven't gotten to spend my 10,000 hours becoming great at it. So I suck. And so I salute you, professional gift wrappers who actually know what you're doing, because you got that one on me.
We need to get you that candy spelling gift wrapping room so you can practice.
There you go.
Yeah, I know. I bought one of those weird, it was a targeted ad that works, just like anything you buy from a targeted ad, works sometimes. It's like a tube that you can slide down the roll and then slide it back up, and it's supposed
to cut.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah.
But if it, those like thinner, more like silkier wraps don't really work for it. So
it shreds up. Yeah.
Yeah.
My mom, one of her very first jobs was at DeGroff's department store in McCook, Nebraska. And she is the most impeccable gift wrapper because they had to gift wrap everything, like not just Christmas, but she was in the fancy ass section of whatever counts as fancy.
When you bought a gravy boat, they were going to wrap it for you.
Yes. And so she like pristine military corners on these boxes.
Oh yeah, no, Dave White, full hospital corners, and like, you know, he knows how to make bows and the color scheme and the whole thing. And I'm just like, oh, here's a present. I hope you like it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Enjoy it. Yeah. Well, speaking of rapping, someone I'd like to rap in my arms is none other than the Queen of the Midwest herself, Super Festival Program Producer Drea Clark. What is good?
Just when I think you won't find a good segue, there you go.
Yeah. I'm back.
My what's good is directly related to our program in that I spoke a while ago about getting a paint by numbers for my parents Christmas. Spoiler, it will not be wrapped for Christmas because I don't think I'm going to finish it until next Christmas. But one of our listeners reached out to me, Lee Meredith, who designed this incredible coloring book called Color Squared, and it's 8-bit, and you can color them in, like, you can do a different approach, like a choose your own adventure for what sort of patterns you're gonna, and offered to send me one, which I was like, oh, the kindness of strangers. But I'm very excited about that. And then I went to the site and it's like legit for sale through a fancy publisher, available wherever you can buy coloring books, super cool designs. Anyway, I thought that was the coolest thing. Okay. I do have a large array of colored pencils, just saying. You're like, oh, I wonder if Drea also does in-person spreadsheets. Yes. Yes. Spreadsheets, both digital and real life.
Yeah. It all scans. No question about it. Iffy, what's good?
Oh, what's good with me? Well, you know, speaking of Christmas tidings, a couple weeks ago, I had the Carol Fest at Vidiot's where we watched three different iterations of the Charles Dickens classic, starting with Muppet Christmas Carol, which was great because it was the early one, a bunch of kids there. Shout out to Andy Daly, who stopped by with his teens. And then after that, we did the Albert Finney 70s version, which, you know, was a much older crowd who definitely like was into it. And then we closed it out with Scrooge, which was popping. And, you know, Scrooge, there's nothing like watching Scrooged, yes. Albert Finney's Scrooge, then Scrooged with Bill Murray, which, you know, there's nothing quite like watching a movie like Scrooged and realizing, like, oh, some of these jokes are wild. Some of these jokes are,
Welcome to every movie made in the 80s.
Yeah. Can I add that my favorite part of this, what's good, is this all kicked off when Alonzo texted our group chat, why am I finding out about this on the street? And sent a photo. And that's right. If he programmed a trio of Christmas-themed movies at a movie theater near us and did not tell a lot of
did he consult this so-called Christmas zaddy? No.
It was my greatest sin, and it is a sin I will not repeat in Christmas 2024. I promise you that.
I just watch. I'm going to host a Space Jam Pacific Rim marathon. Will I tell if he...
Yes. I don't know. He's going to have real-life kaiju there, and you're not going to find out about it till later.
Like, we had all this kaiju, and you couldn't see none of it.
Yeah, you could have gotten in your own robot suit, but I guess you missed it. Sorry.
We missed you on the mech fittings.
Sorry to this man.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, I will have... That is my... It is the year of atonement for me. I will be... trying to do everything I can to make up for it. But until then, we will talk about these movies. So it is our end of the year spectacular. We're counting down our favorite movie from 2023. We'll also tell you some movies that we're excited for in the new year. But first, it's time to hand out some Maxi Awards. Once again, we come to you with the ultra prestigious Maximum Film Award, aka the Maxi Awards. We're doling out honors to whatever movie phenomena we feel like, be they directors, performances, objects, or intangible concepts. Who wants to dole out the first Maxi Award?
I have several awards. It will not surprise you to know that I researched this section, found a bunch of things, wrote it down in different color coordinated columns.
As long as we're giving an honorary to Glenn Close for having been in the movie Maxi in the 1980s.
Yeah, yes. obviously. Yeah, that's what our award is shaped like. Yeah.
There you go.
So mine is, I do love when Alonzo many times has introduced our audience to the term needle drop, which is, of course, when a motion picture uses an existing song as in lieu of score. And I'm telling you, the best needle drop of the year can only go to the kettle drum version of P.I.M.P., The Anatomy of a Fall.
It's its own character.
You will spend a lot of time thinking, what song would I play if I was trying to aggravate my partner past the point of no return? And also that track will be stuck in your head for the rest of your life. And the power of that, I mean, knows no bounds. Enjoy that Maxi kettle drum.
My Maxi for I Didn't Know Who You Were and Now I'm Obsessed With You. I would normally be giving this to Iowa Debris, except for the fact that season one of The Bear happened. So I kind of knew who she was. Now I'm obsessed with her because of the amazing 2023 she had between Bottoms and Theater Camp and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem. But a person that I was introduced to this year, and let me just say this. It's on me. This person's out there doing amazing work. I'm the dummy who wasn't paying enough attention, going to the right, live events and whatever. But Sherry Cola. Between the 1-2 punch of Joyride and Shortcomings, she rocketed to like, oh, I'm learning your name now, to could you please be in everything? Big year for Sandra Hüller, obviously, but, you know, she's been around for a while, and Sherry Cole, like I said, if I were a better Los Angeles, you know, comedy attender, I would be far more versed in her work. But, you know, I'm old and boring, and you have to come to the movie theater for me to find you. And she did that this year, and so hurrah, I'm down.
I gotta say, best duo, best newcomer duo, I am going to have to give to the Sewer Boys from Dix the Musical. We didn't think that there was going to be a new duo to look out for. We haven't been this hype for some fellas since the Pussy Posse, but the Sewer Boys. They're here to stay.
Oh my God, please, if you have not yet experienced them, go get haunted. Join us. I want you to just crank up the kettle drum version of PIMP and watch a GIF of the Sewer Boys for the entirety of the song. That is a solid call. Okay, I would like to give... this is a genuine, like, genuine appreciation. My cameo of the year, in terms of, like, a fully committed performance I did not see coming, in the motion picture Dungeons & Dragons, Sir Bradley Cooper. You guys, shows up as, like, an elf? I don't know how Dungeons & Dragons work. A halfling, thank you. And he is so genuinely, like... nebbishy and sweethearted. I was like, oh, can that guy act? Question mark? Genuinely impressed. Like, that my takeaway of Dungeons and Dragons was, oh, that was a treat. And Bradley Cooper? That gets a maxi for me. If I put 12 question marks behind your name, you deserve an award.
But, you know, the thing that I really want to kind of sin with it is, you know, this is an actor who is noted, actor slash director, who's noted for not wanting chairs on his set.
Yeah.
There's no chairs on sets. I've always hated chairs.
But a performance in the biggest chair.
My favorite, that's so true. My favorite thing about that stupid quote was everyone was like, yeah, we had 8,000 Apple boxes everybody sat on. Like, it was literally just like the thing you were sitting on. He wanted it to look like a movie set. Whatever. I just mean as an actor, iffy. Just that one actor.
Yes. Nothing else. Well, I'll tell you, I think I speak for many homosexuals everywhere where I say that I'm thrilled that the musical is still not dead. And so I want to give a joint maxi to Wonka and the Color Purple for making it happen this holiday season. They are both bringing the choreography, the songs, the integrated into the plot, building characters, doing all the things. You know, there was a lot of talk about how both of the trailers sort of hid the fact that they were musicals, but you know, once you're in the theater, it doesn't matter because you're getting a musical, and dang it, they're both really terrific. So kudos, and please, Hollywood, more.
Here's hoping Mean Girls also pans out. I've only seen the Color Purple so far, and I'm with you. I'm team Color Purple. Yeah.
Also, I want to give out the I'm gonna call it the on-screen, behind, in front, and everything in between being greatness award to Ben Affleck, who with Air made everyone who worked on that movie a piece of the profits, which is something that kind of came and went. And I think in light of the strikes is quite the kind of like move and stance, I think, to make as we are now seeing that we're pushing towards these record profits in movies and we're trying to force them to happen continually, but we're not trying to make sure everyone gets some of that money, and him getting in front of it, being the least Boston ever and saying, I'm gonna do something good for once. So shout out to you. And I hope your next round of donkeys is on me. Park your car in front of my house anytime you want.
Park your car.
So he created the first Amazon union.
I can't wait till somebody makes a movie about how Ben Affleck created that setup for Air.
Yeah.
For the worker payoff. That'll be great. Can't wait to watch one of those capitalist biopics.
That's your favorite, right?
It is. What is my favorite, and actually, you know, piggybacks dramatically, musically off of Alonzo's, is I have two that I think we would agree on for recognizing dance in film, best duo and a best solo. Obviously, my best duo is going to be old Emma Stone and Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things. Mm. And please know that one of my personal goals for 2024 is to find someone to make them learn that dance with me, because I watched it, and the amount of times, like, there's just a few jerky moves and I find myself like, I'm of the age of learning Janet Jackson's If choreography was like a very central experience, and that Poor Things gives me the same. But then also best solo dance, of course, the end of Saltburn, like,
Yes.
To you, Barry Keoghan.
Yes.
With to a you.
Special commendation to Sophie Ellis Bextor.
Yes. Murder on the Dance Floor, indeed. Here, here.
My final maxi, I just want to call hashtag not all streamers, because streaming services were definitely the villain this year, and deservedly so when you're talking about, you know, Max disappearing movies or Netflix acquiring films at festivals and then burying them. And, you know, their sort of general peevishness about paying people what they're worth and revealing their numbers and all that stuff. But I want to point out that the dream of streaming, that it will give people access to films and TV shows that they wouldn't normally get to see, and maybe because they didn't come to their town at all, or maybe they're just, you know, difficult to find even on DVD or whatever. So, you know, Canopy and Film Movement Plus and Ovid and Mubi, all of the folks out there who are trafficking very hard into art house and foreign and documentary and, you know, tiny indies and short films and all the stuff that you're just not going to find anywhere else. Metrograph at Home, they are doing the Lord's work, and they are, I think, really delivering on the notion that cinema is for everybody, that you don't have to live in New York or Los Angeles or San Francisco to be able to see, you know, the collected works of Strobhuyer or whatever, you know, that these streamers are bringing them to you. So I just want to think that there are the good guy streamers, and they're not all the shitheel streamers.
Yes, indeed.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear.
Well, before we go to our first break, producer Marissa is breaking in here because I want to give a possibly too earnest Maxi Award to you guys, Iffy, Alonzo, and Drea. This for a specific reason, not just for being a great podcast co-host, for a specific reason, which is that this year we had the intense challenge of having a movie podcast during these historic double strikes. And obviously the real, like, heroes are the striking unions on the picket lines who, you know, made a big push forward for the industry. But it was very cool for me to be a part of getting to do so much news and, like, spreading so much awareness through the show, and you guys getting to hear you guys talk so vociferously about it. And hopefully, you know, you radicalized a few people out there listening to the union cause and really explained what was going on and why it was so important to so many listeners. So good on you.
Well, Marissa, you are part of the co-op ownership here at Maximum Fun.
Indeed.
So it is thanks to y'all that we are walking the walk in addition to talking the talk.
Yes. Very pro-union industry over here at Maximum Fun.
Yes. On that note, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, it's going to be our top 10 list.
Hey, this is Andrew Reich, the host of Dead Pilot Society, the show that takes comedy pilots that were sold and developed at networks and streamers but never produced, and gives them the table reads they never got a chance to have. If you've never checked out Dead Pilot Society, this month's episode might be the place to start. The cast is incredible, headlined by the one and only Zooey Deschanel, and also featuring Padgett Brewster, Michaela Watkins, Hamish Linklater, Asif Ali, and Maximum Fun's very own Hal Lublin. So go to MaximumFun.org or your favorite podcatcher and check out this incredible cast on the latest episode of Dead Pilot Society.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ivy Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Alonzo Duraldi.
Well, 2023 was a year of highs and lows in Hollywood. It was a year of record-breaking double strikes. It was also a year of the Barbenheimer. But through it all, movies continue to exist, and we continue to watch and talk about them. So now, we're going to go around and share each of our favorites. So we're going to do round robin. So Drea will start, then Alonzo, then me.
We'll each start with our number 10 choice and work our way to number one.
Yes, we'll go from 10 to 1.
All right, so as ever, you guys know it's not very easy for me to put things in
number.
Yep,
that's why I'm glad you're starting.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. I could not only shift around the numbers of these many times, I could change 5 whole films. If you came back to me in an hour, I'll talk myself out of almost anything or into another. But now that you know that about me, let me tell you, number 10, Bottoms. Freaking made my list.
Nice.
I love this movie. Emma Seligman, we've spoken about before when she had Shiva Baby, that hopefully I finally said right. This was her, you know, co-creation with Rachel Sennett. Alonzo's already nodded to Ayo Edebiri. Like, so much talent in this, and that's even before we get to my future boyfriend, Marshawn Lynch. Or
Spirit Award nominee, Marshawn Lynch.
Spirit Award nominee, breakthrough performance, Marshawn Lynch.
Wow.
Yes, indeed. Or Ruby Cruz. Like, I mean, too young to marry me, but, you know, marry me. So there's so much skill in this movie. It is so rapid-fire funny. The world-building is solid. And it is just... it is moving so quickly and its own thing, even while it gestures at a lot of other movies you may have loved before. Bottoms, love it so much. Definitely my top 10.
Yeah, this is a movie that I watched it and I felt like I was seeing the rules of comedy being rewritten, and that I was seeing a movie that was going to be the discovery of subsequent generations of teenagers. And I haven't felt that way about a movie since Heathers, which is like 35 years ago. I know.
Watch your mouth.
Yeah, believe me, this will be popping up on my list even higher. But yeah, Bottoms, I think, is I'm glad that it did well in theaters and that people discovered it. But I think it's going to be the kind of thing that for years to come, people are going to be like grabbing their friends and be like, oh my God, you have to see this.
Agreed.
Oh yeah. I also agree that that is straight up the truth.
My number 10, which, and again, like Drea, same caveat, I could totally scramble these numbers. I got 10 runners up that I might get into later. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. I hate ranking things, but my number 10 slot goes to Todd Haynes and May December, which is a film that is just getting out into the world on Netflix. I think there are people who might be skittish about it because they wonder if it's, you know, somehow going to be pro statutory rape or something, but no, it's not. And it's not just about that. It is, the premise is basically that Julianne Moore, like Mary Kay Letourneau, is a, you know, a woman who had an affair with a teenager and went to jail, had his kid in prison. They got married, had more kids. But the idea here is that Natalie Portman is playing an actress who is going to play Julianne Moore in a movie. And she's come from Hollywood to their town in Georgia to observe and try and, you know, like get to the, try and really crack who this character is. And of course, misses everything that's happening in front of her because she's off chasing her own stuff. This is an oddly funny movie. And it's a movie with a lot of layers in terms of what is the truth and who's manipulating whom and who's the most emotionally stunted. It's a film, I think, that really rewards repeat viewings. It plays into a lot of Haynes's themes about representation, about, you know, parallels and the media and that kind of stuff. But it is very much its own thing. And I think it's a film that people are going to be watching and arguing about again. Not in the same way as Bottoms, but definitely one they're going to be talking about for a very long time. Charles Melton as Julianne Moore's husband gives a breakout performance. You may remember him as the first Reggie on Riverdale. This is a film that I've seen it twice and I've got more to glean from it. And I look forward to those journeys. So May December.
Ooh. Was my number 5. I'm absolutely team May December with you. It is so watchable and also so smart while still being soapy in certain ways, but respects the gravity of what's being explored here, of what is lost in a life. I'll tell you, like, you could watch it just thinking of my favorite element, which is that Natalie Portman's character is actually like a really terrible TV actress. And that just like changes everything. Like, you get these little hints. You could also watch it just for Joe, the Charles Melton's character, relationship with his kids and how heartbreaking that is and complicated and real. So yeah, May December, fantastic, incredibly easy to watch for something that is lifting a lot of heavy things.
Yeah, for sure. So my number 10 is, at first I was going to say, I'm not sure if it'll be on many people's list, but I feel like it is going to be on a certain type of man's list. And that is, I'm going to have to ride for my boy yet again, another year, Beau is Afraid. We're gonna take you on that long ride, and I will give you the tip that I give to everyone. If you haven't seen it, there's no twist. Just take it in. There is no twist. My biggest theory, I think I've said it on the pod, with why a lot of this movie left folks disappointed, is because Ari has left you thinking that there will be a twist in his movies, and you sit there waiting for a twist. 3 hours later, there is not a twist, and then you do not want to waste another 3 hours to really take it in. So I'm going to save you. There's no twist. Take it in. And then you'll enjoy it, maybe.
That sentence could be really disturbing in other uses, but for here, I think you're spot on. I am a not it with Beau is Afraid. However, I am a good for you for artists finding the right audience. So good for Ari Aster connecting with you, getting out there. He also takes interesting swings, and they give him money to do it. So spend that money, guy.
Yeah, I'm a not for me, but I respect the hustle, and yes, he is not phoning it in. You know, he's definitely trying some things here, and if those things respond to you, then great.
I think that is the best way to describe it. Definitely not phoning it in. It is a swing, rock with it, and see where it takes you.
Number nine.
This is one that possibly Iffy and I will share. Godzilla Minus One. This was a big surprise for me, which I love in a movie directed by Takashi Yamazaki. It is obviously about Godzilla, whom you might have heard of before, but it is one of the most emotionally powerful war-related films I saw. I certainly had a much stronger emotional reaction to this than I did Oppenheimer, in terms Agreed. Of what it means for survivor's guilt, what it means for living in the shadow or the repercussions of choices. I found it, and then all that, and still an amazing Godzilla movie. So I thought this was like such a not a discovery. I'm certainly not the only person who heard of Godzilla Minus One, but for me, of films that stood out in a way that I was not expecting. And it's also a tremendous big action movie. And I think was like a $15 million budget or something. Like,
that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. It's impressive beyond anything.
That's my number five.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the you might be buckling up waiting for Iffy to drop this one, but I, as of recording, I have yet to see it, but it will probably be a top three for me, just based on everything I hear of my fellow Godzilla heads. It would have been up there.
This is the first Godzilla movie that made me cry, but it's also the first Godzilla movie that made me frightened. You know, I grew up in the 70s where, you know, Godzilla fought off aliens and the smog monster and stuff, and he was like our hero, and oh, it's so cute when he stomps on things. This was like, holy shit, I'm about to be stepped on by a dinosaur who is laying waste to the city, and I'm in the subway. You know, like, it was terrifying, but also really moving, and like you said, Dre, a kind of beautiful exploration of survivor guilt and of post-war trauma and of the living in the nuclear age, all of which I found much more effective here than I did in Oppenheimer. Go figure. My number nine is technically a Christmas movie, but not in the way you might be thinking. That would be Cristian Mungiu's RMN. This is a Romanian film about a town where most of the people who live there have gone off to find higher paying jobs in Germany and other parts of Europe. And so when a local bakery is trying to hire new employees, nobody locally wants to work for the shitty wages that they're promising. So they wind up importing workers from Africa, which makes the locals very upset. And the fact that this is all taking place at Christmas time just sort of plays up the irony of the fact that these people have completely missed the message about welcoming the outsider and all of the other things that are supposed to be tied up in the Christmas season. This movie is brutal and powerful and, you know, darkly, darkly funny in that way that so many of the Romanian New Wave cinema films have been. And there is a town meeting shot that lasts for like 12 minutes, and it's riveting.
Ooh. Nice. Solid choice. It was a festival film the year before, so it was not on my... I get my years mixed up with films.
Oh, yeah,
films
it gets wobbly, I know.
Yeah. Good call. Good call, though.
Yeah, you know, coming in at my number 9, you know, I gotta give a shout-out to an icon. There was a movement. And I feel like since it was earlier in the year, it was easy to forget about, slip by. But it had it shook. A gay icon. It's Megan. We're going to do Megan.
Edge of my seat. Didn't see it coming.
You know, and, you know, I also got to give it points for, like, once again, you know, I often talk, whenever we talk about horror on here, I'm like, horror, good horror is talking about, like, the fears of our time, of our generation. And what is more scary than an AI trying to kill you when we literally went to strike for that? So yeah, Megan, yeah, you are my number 9.
If you live in Hollywood, you're afraid of an AI killing you or a cocaine bear killing you. So yeah, the movies, I think, were very on point this year.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. This is a film we didn't get a chance to talk about, but I loved it. It's from a director whose other work I've loved. And I really hope people check it out. Passages, Ira Sachs' film. It is about a love triangle where the fulcrum is an absolute manipulative asshole, played by Franz Rogowski, who's playing a film director, which is infinitely funny to me. He's married to Ben Whishaw. He wraps a film and then is like, ooh, hello. Oh, and I never say her
Adele
name
right. Adele Exarchopoulos.
Thank you. Who's so also like riveting. He begins an affair with her. So it's like the three of them and all of the tanglements. But the true delight in this is watching Franz be a character that you're like, I mean, I get it, because who's not in love with both Ben and Adele themselves, but he's also the worst, and it's so enjoyable to watch it go down.
Yeah, I love Ira Sachs movies, and yeah, Rogowski seems like he wandered in from a Fassbinder film, and not in the good way.
Please never describe me like that. Yeah,
this guy is just a nightmare, and Rogowski completely commits to all of the awful facets of this character. It is a treat to watch. My number 8 is completely on the opposite end of the spectrum, and that would be Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Based on the classic 1970 Judy Blume YA novel. This is a book I remember reading in fifth grade because all the girls were reading it and they weren't talking to the boys about it, and I needed to know what was going on. It is the second film from Kelly Fremond Craig, whose film The Edge of 17 was also a very incisive look at the just awkwardness of the teenage years. But this is... It is so rich in period detail, and it is so warm-hearted and understanding, while at the same time completely embracing the utter awkwardness that is part and parcel of any really good and true story about adolescence. A banger cast that includes Benny Safdie, Kathy Bates, the very talented Abby Ryder-Fortson in the lead, and... My God, I don't care about the Oscars, but I'm going to be so annoyed if they don't nominate Rachel McAdams for playing Margaret's mom. She's amazing in this.
She's so good. I loved that. We talked about that. We did a whole episode on it and how it totally nails the sensibility of the book of it, while making, you know, just the... That even if you were not alive in that, or if you didn't experience anything like it yourself, like it's so nostalgic and real and humane and lovely and, you know, also awkward and funny, like everything at that age tends to be, if you're lucky. If you're lucky and the worst you think of that age is awkward and funny, congratulations.
More power to you.
Yes.
Yes, I agree. And that is also my number 8. So it was great. Because, you know, like I said, when we talked about it, it's a film that I'm excited to show to Naomi when she's like the right age. And then it'll be a fun thing where she's really into it. Guess what? There's a whole last book. So check this out. So that is mine right now.
I hope that's how you introduce everything to your daughter. Hey, Naomi, there's a whole last book.
Yeah, get on it. Passion of the Christ. Guess what?
A whole last book. You can...
and a prequel.
Yeah.
Amazing. Okay, is it me again?
Yes.
Yes, I'm ready. All right. This is a film that might have premiered at Sundance, so I've loved it for a long time. It is called Eileen. It is by director William Oldroyd, who also directed Lady Macbeth, which was one of my favorite films when that came out. It's an adaptation of a whole ass book by Atessa Moshfe. I'm probably saying her name wrong and I apologize. But it stars Thomasin McKenzie and an up and comer named Anne Hathaway. It's set in the 60s and Thomasin plays a woman working at a corrections facility, but like for teenage boys, and has like an alcoholic father that she's sort of caretaking and just all this stuff, when a very blonde and sort of femme fatale style Anne Hathaway rolls in, and then it gets darker and sexier and weirder. And I will not tell you about the story because this is a fun one to discover, but it is dark and tangly in ways that I find so great and fun to watch when they are in capable hands like they are here. So Eileen, sexy, dirty, and just dark.
Next to Bo is Afraid on my not for me shelf. I liked the idea of this movie, and I think there were some cool aspects to it, but it didn't quite land with me. But I'm glad you liked it. My number seven is actually a film that we will be discussing at great length very soon, so I won't get too into it, but it's Jonathan Glazer's The Zone of Interest, which LA Film Critics honored as Best Picture, Best Director, Best Lead Performance for Sondra Hewler, shared with Anatomy of a Fall, and Best Music/Score, which we gave both to composer Mika Levy and to the film's sound designer Johnny Byrne, for reasons that will become apparent to you when you see, and more importantly, hear the film. It is basically a movie that takes the, in the same way that you know, there are certain movies where you will always think of them when you hear that song. When I hear anybody reference Hannah Arendt's The Banality of Evil, I will think about The Zone of Interest. And like Arendt, it is about World War II that she's talking about, the Nazis, about the Holocaust, but not told in a way that you are used to seeing. And I think all to its, you know, which makes it all the better. But again, I don't want to get into it too much because we're doing a whole ass episode about it. But if you have a chance to see it before we do it, I recommend Jonathan Glazer's The Zone of Interest, my number seven.
I'll add that you may not think that that comes up a lot in Alonzo's world, but you don't know the dorks he hangs out with. Hannah Arendt is referenced constantly. The yes. Banality of evil thrown about every other conversation.
She's mentioned in Party Girl. What can I tell you?
Exactly. This movie is my number six. We are definitely going to cover it in detail on a future episode, so please watch it. Know it made at least two of our lists, and we'll dig into it in very deep and meaningful ways then.
Indeed.
All right. Yeah, and my number seven is just going to be the D&D movie. You know, I think, the D&D movie has kind of been
Honor like Among Thieves.
The Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves. Very important, so you're not just searching Dungeons & Dragons.
You don't want to watch that one with Thora Birch and Jeremy Irons by mistake. Let's be very clear.
But yeah, there's been many attempts, and when it was even announced, I think fans of the game were already kind of groaning because it just has not been a good track record, and it is exciting. And, you know, I will say, as someone who is like very staunchly anti-franchising every fucking idea we do, I think the D&D movies do have a very good and unique opportunity with this film to do more movies, but let every movie be its own thing, tell different stories. So it can be a container that is telling different stories, which in the grand scheme of things, I think is better than being like building our Avengers and Alonzo, Iffy, and Drea have to watch seven different movies to understand the plot of the 10th, you know,
and don't forget the TV show.
Yeah. Jinx. But yeah, so I really am excited that they did it and kept it simple. And even the story they told really doesn't try to be this larger than life. It's a simple story that feels like it can be at any game. And I think it brought nerds together to say something good for once, because usually they're talking dumb shit on Twitter. So thanks for shutting them up for just long enough to enjoy this movie and not say anything stupid.
Jarnathan! Yeah. It's a fun watch. I enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, from the makers of Game Night, which is why I should have known going in that I would enjoy it as much as I did.
My number six was The Zone of Interest, which we just touched on. So,
well, my number six was Bottom. So back to you.
Well, you know, my number six, I'm going to give it, oh man, see, this is where it gets hard, because once I get into five is where I stop kind of doing my goof stuff and really trying to think of like, okay, what can I stand on? What hill can I die on? So my closing out the early tens, I got to give it to Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. It was a solid film, and like we talk about, that studio just pushing what it means to make animated films and using the animated styles to do storytelling, definitely could have been higher than five, but I think I'm looking at this pool that I have and it's gonna get very fucking spicy. As a matter of fact, even the argument between five and six I think is already gonna make some of y'all go, well, you could have switched it around, but you know, that's the problem with these rankings. Drea, back to you. Good luck.
Back to me. Spider-Man was definitely one that was, like I said, it was in my top 10 at some point, and then I just kept shuffling the deck. So beautiful, so wonderfully crafted. The animation in that, like, I still think of different points when, like, what's the girl's name?
Spider-Gwen.
Spider-Gwen, thank you. When she's, like, trying to tell her dad something, and it's very emotionally vulnerable, and then, like, the colors just keep shifting in how they're drawing her, like... hit me. Well, so my number five was May December, which we've already discussed. On to you, Alonzo.
My number five was Godzilla Minus One, so iffy!
Number five is going to be none other than Air. You know, as someone who owns over 200 sneakers, that movie, there was no way that wasn't going to make a top 10 list, I think, coming down to it. And just, yeah, I really was oddly moved by the fucking speech by Matt Damon. And it is like, you know, as someone who is constantly complaining about consumerism, invading art, this was the one time that marriage did work, and I hate myself for it.
If he was the first person to upload it to XTube.
I very much enjoyed Air. It didn't make my list. I want you to know that my friend Tessa and I have future dreams of going for Halloween in costume with her as Ben Affleck and me as Matt Damon from Air.
Please.
And I just want, like, those chinos. I want that tucked in dad shirt with the beeper. Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Sign me up.
That's what I like to call a solid movie. You know, like it is very solid. That script is, you know, covers its bases. It does what it's setting out to do. You know, some great performances. You know, Viola Davis, top of the heap. But like all throughout, I think, you know, like Jason Bateman. I mean, like so many memorable performances there. So yeah, it's like it's not a movie that changed my life. It's not a movie I'm necessarily going to even think about a couple years from now. But it absolutely, like, delivers as a satisfying old-fashioned narrative.
You're gonna think of it when I dress up like that for Halloween. That's when you're gonna think about
this. Is true. Yeah that'll come. It'll all come roaring
when I
back.
Come knock on your door with my recruiting clipboard.
Yes,
can't wait. We're at number four. Yes,
number
yes,
four. Okay, from here on out, I'll just say this is hard. Pick a number, any number. Number four. Right. I love this film so much, and not just because it was another Sundance film. Past Lives. This movie is so special and incredible to me. Celine Song, a celebrated theater artist. This is a first time film. This movie, absolutely. I laughed, I cried, I was moved beyond my years. Was I a young girl who originally grew up in Korea and then was separated for my childhood friend and moved to New York? I did not do any of those things. And yet there were so many parts of this movie that I was like, oh, yeah, me human, that human. Like I related, or I projected entanglements I had had, or childhood dreams, or ambition, or my own role as a woman. Like, past lives absolutely will stick with me. And so it's one of those movies, someone just like put up the clip of literally the last shot of it is just her walking down the street.
Oh man.
Devastating. I was like, oh my God, I'm so exhausted. I spent the whole weekend with this like ex. Like, that's how I felt. Like, just having that clip pop up on like Twitter or something. It's like, oh my God, I'm back there. I'm back in it. Oh, how do I choose?
You tried to escape it. Now you're back in.
Definitely a runner up for me. Yeah. A gorgeous movie. Beautifully, you know, detailed in its emotional explorations. Three really great performances. Oddly enough, I saw a movie that Neon is going to be releasing in 2024 that is an animated film called Robot Dreams that is so moving and wonderful. And in a lot of ways, it's kind of like Past Lives, if Past Lives were about a dog and a robot. And I'll just leave it at that and let you discover for yourself.
Yep. High five. High five to that comparison.
My number, where are we? Four. Well, you know, I'm sure there is a contingent of the audience who is wondering how I didn't get here yet, and another that would rather I didn't maybe at all. But Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon. This is epic filmmaking in the grandest sense. You know, I remember thinking about Heaven's Gate while I watched it, and not in a bad way, because, you know, yes, Heaven's Gate is infamous and notorious now for its, you know, the financial losses. But when you look at the level of detail that Cimino put into creating that town and putting in those townspeople and bringing a period to life, Scorsese's doing the same thing with his 1920s Oklahoma. And, you know, Lily Gladstone, just such a heartbreaking performance. But also, I think DiCaprio is doing fascinating things that's completely unlike any other character he's ever played. De Niro bringing a brand of menace that is a new color in his vast paint box of menace. And I think the ending is so provocative, and it touches on so much of the limitations of how art talks about tragedy. I just think this is a movie that we're going to be, again, this is my recurring theme, we're going to be talking about this movie years from now and reanalyzing it and really digging into what makes it special and what makes it important and why it's meaningful and why it's moving. Yeah, this is a breathtaking experience that I'm so glad I got to enjoy this year, if enjoy is even the word. But yeah, Killers of the Flower Moon.
This was my number three. I'm right here with you.
That's my number three as well.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I we've spoken before, and we will again, about how perspective means so much in the stories that were being presented, and what you can glean from that, and especially something that's historically grounded like this. There's this low-key observation of what entitlement and complicity look like, and it is so powerful, and it's been fascinating to me, the people that watched this and thought in any way Leonardo DiCaprio's character was like presented as empathetic, and you're like, no, presenting him as seeing himself as complicated is more human, certainly, like that's more realistic, but it is not, oh, giving this person facets equates forgiveness of action, and it is so much truer to what it looks like for how our country was shaped, of how what it looks like, what just evil or what's classified as evil looks like, and then
what colonization looks like,
looks like, and then to do that and also be given like such a rich and textured detailing of what the Osage people look like and what their community looked like, and their own leadership and the grounding and the respect of that, of they're not like, oh, these are just the quiet victims of, like, no, these are people who were, you know, have built lives and built whole things, and this is what they went through. And I thought there was a lot of love and respect that went into presenting this story, and an absolute acknowledgement of how distance the creators were from that story themselves. So, yeah.
Oh yeah. And I think, you know, we just this, to reiterate that, like what Alonzo was saying, was how colonization works. And, you know, anytime I'm just given psychic damage by looking at some of these weird right wing white supremacist chuds kind of take on the idea of colonization, they're always like, well, you know, it was back then and they won the war and they, you know, like as if it was like a loss that happened. And this really showcases how nefarious it is. Like it wasn't just coming in. Even then, that is bullshit. And just because it happened in the past doesn't mean like you win. This is the real world. This is in video games. You don't win land. You don't win. But even then, it wasn't that. It was coming in, pretending to be working in unison, pretending to be sharing a land, sharing a space, and then like slowly murdering and killing off people. Because remember, before this one happened, it was these same people that allowed them to survive this land. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, I almost forgot my number four. And my number four, you know, once again, it was still on my soapbox, is going to be Barbie. Which, you know, by if this soundbite played to us a year ago, in the year ago's wrap up, we'd be like, what are you talking about? But I do want to just take a second and say my final piece about what I feel like. And I know it feels silly coming from a man, but I do think it's important to be said. But, you know,
men can only relate to women if they have daughters. And that's you.
Well, you know, well, this is more so.
I'm not making fun of him, not you.
This is more so the conversation about like how feminist Barbie was and how, you know, and it not being a big deal of the stuff they said because it wasn't even that deep. And I think it is a lack of understanding of audience and reach when we have those discussions. Yeah, your like deep cut art house movie can be way more feminist than Barbie, but who all is seeing that? And respectfully, not to say that people shouldn't be seeing that, but genuinely, who all is seeing that versus this widely seen movie? It is the number one grossing movie of the year, and it is talking about feminist points. And yeah, it may be 101, but if you've paid attention at all,
have you
to
met
our
a man?
Politics, our Twitter, any social media site, we need 101. We ain't on 401 yet. We ain't there. As a whole, we ain't on. You may be, and you know, you may be, but also how many black female authors you reading? But that's a whole nother discussion. But I ain't even gonna go there. What I'm talking about is we need to stop kneecapping the wins that we do have in things like this because you wanna be the cool person who have seen it. I talked about this with the physical media when all of it was pulled off of Sony and people were like, you should have known. It's like, well, we have an idea of what buying things mean. And because you know, knew all this stuff because you were ahead of the charge, so was I. But I didn't have that approach. So was Alonzo. Alonzo never has that approach. I think we need to stop trying to be the smartest and the coolest because it's not that cool because people used to get bullied for it and the smartest, coolest people are usually around you. They're not saying something while you're making an ass of yourself trying to be smarter than you actually are.
I'm going to back you up on this. Barbie was absolutely in my rotation of top 10. And part of it is, I know exactly what you're getting at. Like, I am a person who has been proudly uncool since the day she was born. And I think coolness is overrated. And I think loving things that are popular or easily accessible, it's so easy to have that dismissed in certain ways, which is, it's just bull honky, as my grandmother would have said. Barbie is very enjoyable and very fun. And when I tell you how much there's certain speeches and thoughts in that, yes, maybe rudimentary to people who are like, oh, I'm deeply immersed and bell hooks. Great. Good. Keep doing that. Lead your organizations. You know who's not? A lot of people. So I'm with you. If it's enjoyable and also has even just like dropping the seeds of inspiration and forethought and putting it to the test of, you know, what this can look like in your future. Good for you for your big ass Mattel movie.
Yeah, you want to be helpful? Create a 102 reading list for the people who were just getting introduced to all this stuff. Exactly. Yeah, this movie was so smart, but like absolutely defies the notion of what we think of an IP movie is supposed to do, while also completely delivering on what an IP movie is supposed to do. In the way that they pepper the history of this doll and her pals throughout, and moving, and just an utter delight. It's my number three.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice.
Wow.
Well, my number three we just did is Killers of the Flower Moon. So there you go.
We did our notes.
That too. Yeah.
I remember my number three was also Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh, that's
back
right.
To you, Dre.
Ooh,
number two.
Hot potato. My number two is a film we've recently discussed, Poor Things. I love You're Gonna Slay Up the Most so much. He speaks my cinematic language. His work makes me so happy. And this one in particular, watching the evolution of the central character played by Emma Stone is so delicious. It's fun on an artistic level. It's fun in, you know, thought provocation. It's fun cinematically. Like, there's so many buttons being pushed in great and innovative ways. And I love this movie. It totally comes together for me. It's fun and ridiculous, but also saying something, a theme of my life, a theme of this list, certainly. And yeah, like I said, I want to learn that dance raw bad.
During the LA Film Critics voting meeting, it was at least one person referred to it as Art House Barbie, because it is also about a young woman's journey of discovery. And it is my number one movie this year.
Yay!
So yes. my number two is a film that I brought up once as a staff pick at one point. But it is Emmanuel Crealese's La Mensita, which is this incredibly funny and moving and visually delightful coming of age story about a trans boy in early 1970s Italy whose mother, played by Penelope Cruz, is the one person who sort of understands why this kid is different and sees what this kid could be while everybody else just doesn't get it and thinks, you know, quote unquote, she needs to, you know, behave herself and do right. This movie is such a great kind of just watching a pre-adolescent coming to an understanding about themselves. And it's also given to these extravagant flights of fancy, these wonderful musical numbers. I talked earlier in the show about how much I love the fact that Wonka and the Color Purple are really keeping the bearing the torch for musicals. But boy, do I love an out of nowhere dance number in an otherwise non-musical movie. And this film gives us a couple. Forgive me, diegetic and non-diegetic, because like there's a scene early on where they put a 45 on and the family sets the table and that becomes a dance number. And there are these fantasy sequences where they recreate a famous, you know, you've probably seen her on YouTube clip from like Italian variety television. And they nail it so perfectly. And it tells you so much about this family and this character. I love, love, love this movie. I've been singing its praises from the moment I saw it and trying to force it on everybody. So here I go again at my number two, La Mensita.
Solid.
Ooh,
is it me?
Yes.
No.
No, if he's number two.
Thank you.
Number two, yeah. Okay, so my number two, truly wild pick, because this is one that is bursting onto the scene. You know, a freshman entry in the annals of the Ifejikude collection. But I am going to have to give it to Asteroid City. I've been thinking about it since we saw it, still thinking about it. It was at the top of my tongue when I was thinking about listing it. And, you know, I know it is when it comes to Wes, everyone has a different kind of like flavor and thought. But, you know, that is my flavor. He's number two.
I love Asteroid City. Obviously, it was on my list for consideration for a maxi for best vending machine production design. there's also an unexpected musical sequence in
this. Yes, yes, there is.
And I think Wes Anderson falls under that whole idea of cool versus uncool. I think a lot of people assume that he thinks he's cool. And therefore, if there's something about his film they disconnect from. And let me tell you, he is not cool. And he does not think he's cool. Dive in. Get your toes wet in the Wes Anderson waters.
And don't sleep on the four Roald Dahl shorts that he created for Netflix this year, which Netflix pretty much buried. But if you search like Wes Anderson or Roald Dahl, they'll come up. And they are all extraordinary. And they all have his impeccable sense of art direction that is also super germane to the story that he's telling.
Yeah, exactly. It's not just frivolous. Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm lost. Is it me?
Yes, yeah, you're number one.
My number one film came out a week ago. And I love this movie so much. I'm so grateful it exists. All of us strangers. When we talk about the movies that are the best for us of the year, this one's number one for me because this is the kind of film I would recommend to a friend to be like, hey, get to know me. Crawl inside me. Because it is, it's filmmaker Andrew Hay, who made Weekend and 45 Years, and I really love his style.
And Lean on Pete.
And he's a beautiful style. He's a very intuitive, sympathetic creator. It stars Andrew Scott, who lost his parents, both of them in a car accident when he was 11 or 12. And he's a writer now. He's going to write about them. He has a sort of unexpected romantic entanglement with his very handsome neighbor, played by Paul Mescal. And then when he goes to his home, there's some bit of magical realism and he discovers his parents there. And he interacts with them and talks to them and comes out to them and has a whole life with the people that he no longer gets. There's things that gave me the same sort of gut wrench of Petite Maman. And you know that is a high praise in my world. but it's so lovely and lonely and family and loss and what you're living for and art. Yeah, all of us strangers.
Yeah, that was definitely in the hopper for me and has some individual moments that I think are some of the most beautiful and devastating of any movie I saw this year. I need to watch it again in about 6 months because so many people I know, like you, Drea, are like L-O-V-E with this movie, and I really liked it, and it just there's an element that I haven't, and I'm sure it's my fault, but you know, it is gorgeous and beautifully constructed, and the four performances, the parents are played by Jamie Bell and Claire Foy.
Yeah,
it's all,
and it is your fault. I'm glad you know that.
Yes. Yeah, what do
you got?
Iffy,
take us to the top.
Okay.
Mine was Poor Things.
Oh, yeah. Well, mine is, another one we liked here on this pod, and I'm actually going to give it to The Holdovers.
Wow, okay.
That was like a standout for me, and I got to say, like, you know, looking at the previews, anything that's like white dudes in the past, I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to think about this, but I think, you know, I really kind of stand by what I said, is a movie kind of like accurately tackling, you know, race inequality and privilege from the perspective of the privilege that really knocks it out the park. I think that really does a lot. And when we think of like how art affects people, because it allows people to put themselves in his shoes and be with him. And then as he is being coached, they inadvertently, hopefully, are being coached. And, you know, Paul Giamatti, I really do enjoy like just everything he brings to the table when he acts, you know, it's always a good time. So, yeah, nice. That is my number one.
Nice. It's a good list.
I think we did it. Can I race through my 11 through 20 real quick?
Oh, yeah. I didn't even bother.
Frederick Wiseman's documentary Menu Plaisir. It's 4 hours, but worth it. Anatomy of a Fall, an Argentine film called The Delinquents. Cord Jefferson's American Fiction.
Yes.
Hayao Miyazaki's Boy and the Heron. Past Lives. The Color Purple. Kelly Reichardt's Showing Up. Sofia Coppola's Priscilla. And The Holdovers.
Ooh. Nice. Many of those were in my also my JB squad with you.
Yeah. Rotation. Yeah, that's what's up. Okay. Well, we'll be right back after here from another show for maximum fun. Stay right there.
If you need a laugh and you're on the go, try STOPPODCASTI.
Were you trying to put the name of the podcast there?
Yeah, I'm trying to spell it, but it's tricky.
Let me give it a try.
Okay.
If you need a laugh and you're on the go, call STOPPODCASTI. It'll never fit.
No, it will. Let me try. If you need a laugh and you're on the go, try STOPPDCOO. We are so close.
Stop podcasting yourself.
a podcast from MaximumFun.org.
If you need a laugh, and you're on the go.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Drea Clark.
We just gave you a lot of great movies to check out, so instead of staff picks today, we wanted to tell you about some movies we're most looking forward to in the new year.
I mentioned one of them already, and that is Robot Dreams, which is a Spanish-produced animated feature film that screened at Cannes this year, and I think had some sort of qualifying Oscar run, like in Chicago for a week, I think. But it's going to be coming out from Neon in 2024, and it is so funny and adorable and like an emotional wallop. I was not ready for Robot Dreams and how much it just punched me in the heart. So that's a movie that I'm very much going to be sending people to go see in 2024.
Carlos Aguilar has been speaking. I've been wanting to see it because of you guys. Got to get on that. I have several titles I've seen already because they're at Sundance. I'll hold off on those until Sundance happens, and then I can get all psyched and begin that train. You guys will be shocked that I'll promote a few Sundance films. But beyond that, there's a few big titles that I'm super excited about, haven't seen. So they could totally disappoint me. Don't hold it. There's a movie called Spaceman, directed by Johan Rank, whom I knew from like music video days. It stars Adam Sandler, Paul Dano, and Carey Mulligan. It is a sci-fi. It's a real acting thing. It's always nice when Sandler turns out like a genuine performance. That could be very exciting. Johan's work is fantastic. Robert Eggers has a Nosferatu film coming out that I have high hopes for. His last film, The Northman. He can be a divisive filmmaker, but you know, I love someone with a strong POV, and he has a style. Diablo Cody has written and coming back with a film called Lisa Frankenstein, being directed by Zelda Williams. It's Robin Williams' daughter, her first film. It's all right there in the title, Lisa Frankenstein. It's exactly what it sounds like. And our buddy, my sweet Bong Joon-ho, my sweet only because I programmed him when he was an infant, has a film called Mickey 17 coming out, starring Robert Pattinson as a clone of himself. Do I need to say more than all of those words together? I cannot wait.
Wait, I thought we were going to round robin. I'm going to throw in a couple more.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I thought we were whipping through it.
It's totally fine. And then if he can take us home. I want to recommend, this is a film that did get an Oscar run in New York and L.A., but it's really not opening until February. It is Tran Anh Hung's The Taste of Things. Tran Anh Hung originally came on the scene with a film called The Scent of Green Papaya, which is this beautifully sensual film about, among other things, food. And this movie is a very beautiful and sensual film about, among other things, food, with Juliette Binoche and Benoit Magimel. And it is a gorgeous film to behold. But the character stuff is really moving as well. And like so many of the best films about food, including Menu Plaisir, which is on my runners-up list, it's about art and it's about humanity and about what we create for each other and as a gift to each other. So that one's one to look out for. And I highly, highly recommend, disclaimer, a friend of mine, but Corey Sherman's film Big Boys is a lovely coming of age comedy about a teenage kid who begins to understand things about himself when he goes on a camping trip with his cousin's huskier boyfriend. It is just lovely and has a great lead performance and is a very assured debut feature.
I love that movie. Ooh. I programmed it at Bentonville, and when I first watched it, I texted Alonzo. I was like, you need to see this, and he's like, I'm friends with the director.
Wow. You know, mines are more in line with the, like, you know, popcorny yada yadas. Furiosa. And also, you know, Fall Guy was something I just did not care about until I saw the trailer. And I was like, which I don't normally watch trailers. Then it, you know, they'd slam them in front of movies. And I was like, oh, oh, this isn't kind of what I was thinking it was.
Gosling I being funny is like, how could anyone resist?
Yeah. So I'm super excited to check that out and, you know, see if, you know, of course, got to shout out that, you know, little indie darling Dune Part 2. we'll see that finally come out. Last but certainly not least, I am genuinely excited to see what is about to happen with Blade. So is it coming out? Let's see the over under. Let's find out next year. All right. Drea and Alonzo, thank you for another wonderful show and, dare I say it, another wonderful year.
Yay, buddies.
And look, to all you listeners, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org or find us at any of our social media channels, which are all linked in the show notes. Next week, we're going to be talking about a movie we've been, hinting at all episode. It's The Zone of Interest. So, buggle up. But our producer is the wonderful Marissa Flaxbart. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun. Bye-bye.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows.
Supported
directly
by you.